Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Today, we bring you the first part of a two-part conversation with U.S. Representative Kristi Noem. Our topic is agriculture. Since I didn't grow up on a farm, I warned her I might start with some basic questions, but Representative Noem was quick to point out that more and more of our leaders have become detached from life on the farm.
I'm in Washington, D.C. I've gotten a lot of what I would call not dumb, but interesting questions, because there's not many people in Washington, D.C. who have ever seen a farmer stepped foot on a ranch before.
Sure.
So I'm used to it. So go ahead and give me your best shot.
Not too many farm kids out there.
No. In fact, very few. The committee that I serve on now, I'm the only one that grew up on a farm and has that kind of a perspective. And, you know, I actively farmed. That's what I am, is a farmer and a rancher for many, many years. So it's good to have a voice in D.C. that actually knows what it feels like to be in an industry that's so volatile.
And so do people, what's the main thing that they miss that they don't even think about, that you have to remind them and say, well, what, you know, this impacts farmers and producers in this way? What's sort of the main areas that come up?
Well, I constantly remind them that you can farm for 20 years and make a pretty good living, but you could have one bad year and completely go out of business. Not only is your inputs so high, you know, your land costs a lot, your machinery costs a lot, your cattle costs a lot, but then not only are those farmers leveraged and are borrowing money to purchase all of that, but then they're borrowing money just to operate. So they go to a bank every year and get an operating loan that gets them the money that they need to plant the seed. And then they just hope that that fall there's something in the dirt there they can go pick up and sell in order to pay off the bank. So that's why it's such a risky business, because you can do everything right and feel like you made the right decisions, and then if it doesn't rain, you know, you don't make any money that year. So it is really a very volatile industry that really depends on Mother Nature's cooperation, too.
So in a year like this year where we're looking at drought conditions, How risky is it right now?
Yeah, it's very tough because also our commodity prices are not very high, or at least they're not at the levels that they were a couple years ago. And if you get higher prices, at least if you don't get many bushels in the grain bins to sell, then at least you can still pay your bills. So that's why we focused on ag policy, having a safety net there. And when I talk about ag policy, I'm talking about it from a national security standpoint. The way that I've always viewed this is that it's important that America feeds itself. We don't ever want to have a situation where we import our food, because then another country controls us. And so we've made a decision at the national level that it was important to grow our own food, that we don't have one or two big companies or individuals growing all of our food, so that they, again, control the food supply. And that we don't have a natural disaster happen where everybody goes out of business in 1 year. So that's what ag policy does. It's there to give a safety net to make sure that we keep the diversity in agriculture. So not only do we produce our own food, but it's also affordable. We want every person in this country to go to a grocery store and be able to buy food. So if we didn't have that situation there, it could get very expensive, and then we'd really, you know, all your priorities change when you can't feed your family. You know, today people might be worried about getting to a ball game or spending the day at the lake or maybe even being able to fill their car with gas. But boy, if you can't afford to feed your family, then everything changes.
So when the prices or the markets fluctuate as much as they do, or at least that's, you know, you keep hearing about a wild shift, what's the role of federal government in sort of mitigating that? How do you address those big shifts in commodity prices?
Sure. Well, we have focused on more of a free market situation and also having stability in the markets to the point to where we can sell our commodities. We can grow what we need for this country, but also be able to sell it and to other customers even outside of the country. So, and a good perspective to have is that when you look at the United States, 95% of our customers are outside the United States. So we can't just focus on only within our own borders when we're growing and producing items and crops and food and anything that has to do with manufacturing. We always have to remember that, you know, if we're going to have a stable economy, that 95% of the customers in the world are outside of our country. So we need good trade agreements. If you have good trade agreements and can build long-term situations where other people are depending on us, too, that stabilizes our markets. But what we've done is in ag policy, when I first got to Congress, there was some farm bills that set federal ag policy that needed some changing. People were upset at direct payments that farmers got. They didn't think that that was the right way to approach it. They were upset at the different programs that were there. And so really the last farm bill that I was a big part of, we got it down to having an insurance program that farmers had skin in the game to where they could buy insurance that would cover their risk. And that's what I really believe is the basic bare bones that we need to have for agriculture, that they take a huge risk every year, and we need to have an insurance program in place that will help them cover that risk to the point where if they do have a big loss year, that at least it doesn't drive them out of business. It won't guarantee them a profit. Mm. You know, it's not there to put any profit dollars in people's pockets, but it's there to make sure that they'll still be around and be able to farm the next year.
How do you know if a legislation or an idea is working and is effective, and how do you know when it needs to be tweaked or adjusted or completely thrown out?
Well, I believe that, first of all, we always need to remember at the federal government level that it's not the federal government's money, it's the taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. So you need to listen to the taxpayers and the people in the country. And if they're upset about something, and I found this, you know, a lot of people are upset about a lot of different things this year. You can learn something from every person you talk to. So my number one goal is to talk to as many people as possible. And I don't just talk to farmers. I talk to the people in the gas station, and I talk to the people running the grocery stores, and I talk to the people at church and ball games and town halls, because then you can really find out what the perspective is out here, and then also look at the program and see what the results are. Now, if we've got a crop insurance program that's doing its job, that means that it's affordable, but farmers have to invest in it as well. It's not something the federal government should just provide for them, and it should make sure that it's covering, you know, input costs on their operating loans to the point that they aren't faced with having to sell the farm the next year if they really have to use it. Hmm. We also have to look at, you know, what farm income is every year and make sure that it's not a program that's padding people's pockets, because then it's certainly not a situation where those taxpayer dollars are being used very well.
Hmm. I'm
always going to be someone who advocates for private industry to be involved in a program. You know, there's been some advocates over the years that have wanted the federal government to take over crop insurance, and I am not a fan of that. We've had that in the past, and it has been, it was not run efficiently. It didn't work well for producers. You know, I've never seen the federal government really do anything better that normal everyday people couldn't do. So I think there always has to be oversight. And when you have a program like crop insurance, there has to be federal government oversight. But I would not want to see the program turned over for the federal government to run, because in my experience, the federal government does not do a good job running those kind of operations.
So are there areas that are still being implemented from the last farm bill, areas of legislation or programs that are still upcoming, or has everything pretty much been implemented and you start hearings for the next farm bill? Or how does that process work?
Well, we're being really proactive. So this farm bill is being implemented, and producers are finding out how it's working, and we'll really find out at the end of this crop year, because we have drought situations in some areas and different parts of the country. This will be our first good test as to how the programs are working to cover that type of risk. But also the Farm Bill had conservation programs in it. We've been disappointed by the amount of contracts for CRP, which is our Conservation Reserve Program, how many were accepted here in the state of South Dakota. So I've been visiting with USDA and sent them a letter and talked to them about the fact that we didn't have USDA approve many of our contracts. But you can really see how a farm program is working based on what happens on the ground out here. So I've been visiting with many of the different industries that are involved in agriculture and conservation to see how it works. But next year we're going to start again on hearings for the next farm bill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just being proactive. That's just working on it and starting to hear from people, how is this one working? What changes do we need to make in the next one to ensure that it works? And every time we have this discussion, it's an opportunity to improve the policies.
What do you expect to hear in some of those early hearings?
You know, I think that we will hear about the need to invest more in conservation. The number of acres that were eligible to be signed up under conservation programs was less than I wanted last year. We also made some changes. I had a bill that was included in the Farm Bill that we called the Preserve Our Prairies Act, and it kept farmers from, it told them that if they were going to dig up grassland and plant it to crops, that they couldn't buy up crop insurance to the same level of the rest of their fields for the first 4 years. And that was because we saw, especially across South Dakota, a lot of people digging up grass, you know, planting corn into it, and then getting the same level of crop insurance that they would on ground that had been growing corn for 20 years, which that land's not going to produce that amount of bushels per acre. So we wanted them to not be able to make money on that land to the level they did on the other acres, because it certainly the production wasn't there to prove that they could. And so that added some more integrity to our crop insurance program. But it also was to say, listen, we need grass out here too. We need a diversified landscape for our habitat, to really care for our soil better, to be good stewards. And so we have to have strong conservation programs too. And, you know, farmers and ranchers are trying to make business decisions and take care of their land. So if we're going to have crop programs, we should have conservation programs as well.
Does agriculture and environmental protection always stand in opposition and need to be balanced, or can they be partners? It seems like they would work together to me.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think the best environmental stewards we have are farmers. You know, they, and that's what people need to realize, I think, and farmers are getting better about telling that story, but they aren't farming that land just for next year's crop. They're farming that land so that their kids and grandkids can farm that land someday. So they really do care about what kind of soil quality they have, that they don't have erosion, you know, that they're taking care of it. So that's what I love, is that when we have a program they can participate in, they sign up. They want buffer strips. They want their highly erodible land, you know, covered in grass so that it can not wash away. And that's, my dad used, you know, raised me when I was real little. From the time I was little, I remember him saying, you know, you don't ever sell land, Chrissy, because God isn't making any more land. You know, land was precious in our family. Yeah. So, and I still walk across the native prairies where I live here on our ranch, and I hope that my great-grandkids get to walk across these pastures and they're still native prairies. So, you know, farmers and ranchers really, truly do care. They also are trying to find programs they can participate in and pay their bills so that their family can still hang on to that land as well.
Do young farmers look at this differently than aging farmers do?
You know, I don't think so. I think we've done a great job telling that story in South Dakota about how important our land is. And that also in our farm bills, you know, we put beginner farmer programs in there because we want young people to be able to stay on the farm. We know that when they're beginning that there's a high amount of investment that has to happen for them to be able to engage in the industry. And so, you know, we put programs in there that allow them lower interest rates on financing, that allow them to participate in farm programs to where, you know, they really can be successful and are incentivized to make those decisions.
Talk to me about country of origin labeling and where we're at and where we need to go with that.
Well, we have had laws. Country of origin labeling was a law that was in place that said when we had meat or products that were grown and raised here in the country, that it would be labeled and say that it was grown here in the United States. I've always been a big supporter of that. I think consumers at the grocery store want to know where their food comes from. And but it's recently come under fire because of WTO provisions and the fact that other countries have been saying that it violates those WTO regulations. And by doing that, we were jeopardizing our trade agreements that we have with Canada and Mexico and other countries. So we had a recent bill come forward, and the ramifications of those WTO violations that were coming down on the United States would be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of economic impact on farmers and ranchers. And so it was going to be a real hardship for them. And recently we had a bill move through Congress that repealed the COOL provisions, which said those labels didn't need to be on the products anymore. You know, I voted against that repeal. I felt like we could find some kind of a a way forward that we could still label our products that would comply with trade agreements, mm-hmm. But it failed. My provision did, and the repeal did get passed through Congress, and so right now we do not have cool provisions. So I am trying and working to make sure that we can get some kind of a program back in place that would essentially do the same thing. You know, we had Republicans and Democrats pushing for the repeal of those COOL provisions because they were worried about the ramifications for agriculture.
Sure.
And having the COOL provisions did hurt our ability to negotiate and maneuver through negotiations on other legislation. So we're working for a voluntary label that would help so we could reverse that repeal, but we haven't found that yet, and we're really working hard to make sure that we have a solution coming up in the future.